Oh, wow, Steve. I've missed you.
I've missed you, too. We were going to do a TV show together, right? And it turned out that I'll explain it to you later, Nate, as to what went sideways on that. But Nate,
these things happen.
These things do happen, I think somebody said something about, like you said, I don't want to work with him. I don't know what that meant.
Sure. Understood.
We'll start. We'll start with last weekend. So they went at 16-10. What were your takeaways from what you saw on an opening weekend?
Yeah, no, I think my biggest the biggest takeaway was kind of the maturity, the lack of panic. I thought that Wisconsin threw the house at Sean Clifford in the first half. And that is the blueprint, right? This is not the last time that Sean Clifford will experience that. He experienced it all last season, and last season did not go well for him in that regard. And so for Penn State, Mike Yurcich, James Franklin, Sean Clifford, the rest of Penn State's offense to have weathered that storm in the first half and come out in the second half and just keep going. Keep doing what you're doing, tweak where you need to tweak, and produce some points, I thought was an early indicator of what this team's potential is this season.
Obviously the adjustment, because Wisconsin is very much a downhill defense, especially with their linebackers. So they're always attacking downhill against the running game. They're attacking downhill in the pass game as well, as you just pointed out. They went outside of that in the second half, used those outside screens.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they had answers, what did that tell you?
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny you mention it because I was just thinking this before I came on, but it's answers and it's avenues to win. And it's a simplistic way to put it, but I think that this team, when you look offensively, not just even offense, actually, special teams and defense too, there are many ways for this team, as it is composed presently, to win, right? Like, you can win with this team with the running backs that you have. You can win with the receivers that you have. You can win with the defense that you have. I thought a major second element that was talked about last week after the game was how much of a boost it provided them from a team-wide perspective that going into the halftime, 0-0 was the score, right? That could have easily been a 17-0 game, and
right.
It wasn't. It wasn't because the defense did what it did. James Franklin even talked about it this week, about how that quick screen game is effectively the running game.
That's exactly what Jack and I said in the broadcast.
Yeah, that's Penn State's running game. Now, that's not to say that there won't be plenty of opportunity, obviously out of the eye or shotgun or what have you, for a traditional running game. But James Franklin and Mike Yurcich see it in those terms as you're just trying to get the ball into space. Because with this team and the athletes that they have, there are going to be opportunities there. Like, one of the major steps forward for Sean Clifford was the check down last week, right? Like,
yes. Yep.
When there's trouble, finding that check down, because the reality is, and I think that he knows this, and I think that this has been drilled into him for the duration of the offseason, is Noah Kane with the ball is a better option in open space than Sean Clifford. And
yeah,
not to mention all of the ramifications of Clifford really being the only option that they have at quarterback, right? He's got to stay healthy. All of those elements in combination, I thought were early indicators of some potential for this team.
There's a couple of other elements that go into this. It's going to be back-to-back weeks facing a 3-4. Now, you know, everybody plays their own version of it, and the personnel's different. But the scheme is still a 3-4 defense. I was talking with Juice Scruggs Wednesday night on the Facebook Live presentation that was on following James' press conference Wednesday night. And I said, you know, what does that, you know, how much more communication is needed when it's a 3-4 as opposed to a standard 4-3? And he said a lot more because, you know, we see 4-3 all the time. And the fact that it's a second straight week, I mean, Nate, that's got to be a big plus that, you know, you're facing this kind of scheme back-to-back weeks.
Familiarity always helps. It just does. That's why, you know, whenever Penn State gets the academies and sees, you know, the triple option or what have you,
yeah.
It's so unfamiliar. James Franklin plays that up all week because you're not going to get that look from what you do with your scout team, right? Like Penn State doesn't have that, and so the defense never really experiences that. This is the same thing. Is, you know, the offense just had an opportunity to see that. Getting back to that this week, should give them a boost of confidence that, you know, they were able to have success in the second half. And, you know, you would think Wisconsin's defense, I'm being kind here, but Wisconsin's defense is poised to be better than Ball State. So,
yeah,
you know, that should give them a little bit of a boost going into this one.
They are facing an interesting team, though. I am not a big believer in this team returns 4 starters on offense, 5 on defense, because at the level Penn State plays at or Ohio State or others, you and I both know they play on defense, what, 20, 22 guys, 23 guys. Offense will play as many as 20 guys. So you've got guys that get a lot of experience as the season goes along. But at a MAC school that's significant, they don't have that kind of depth. So they have 20 out of 22 returning from a team that actually had success last year.
Exactly.
When you look at Ball State, now the first guy I looked at was Jordan Hall. I mean, I think Hall can play for anybody in the Big Ten. He's kind of like the guy they try to get the ball to on everything. But when you look at them, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing is yes, the experience. That's the one that you know, is kind of the common refrain this week is just how much experience they have. But like you said, it's not just about experience. It's having success with that experience. It's coming into this game having already achieved something as a program last season, getting off to a good start last week in a game that they didn't play their best, but still, you know, were able to emerge with a win. That should signify to them an opportunity coming to Penn State, right? Like there is nothing to lose for Ball.
This is
State.
Their Super Bowl. This is their Super Bowl. They can stamp themselves for the year with this game.
It's the Super Bowl without a downside because you can still win
right.
the MAC even if you lose this game.
That's right.
Right. Like there's no consequence because you're expected to lose. But rather than some of the other programs that come into a scenario like this and just don't have, you know, the makeup to compete in an environment like this, this team, I'm not saying will or should for 4 quarters, but at least at the onset of the game, I would expect them to be fairly competitive.
Right. When you look at the combination of punting, takeaways, and I mean like giveaway takeaway 3-0, and the way that defense played, we've seen that formula around here for a long, long time. And I,
yep.
What did you think of the way James played the chess game on Saturday?
Yeah, I thought that, first of all, I'm glad that you brought up the punting because the reaction that I saw about Jordan Stout's day was focused entirely on the missed kicks. And frankly, I thought he had a heck of a day punting the ball. Right? I mean, I think he's 3rd in the country for average after that first game, 53.9 yards per punt. Like, He really was tremendous, and not just tremendous, but tremendous in key moments. Being able to flip field position, that was huge. The fumbles, I don't know what Graham Mertz was doing. that goes for the interceptions too. I mean, obviously, yeah. Brisker had a huge play. What was interesting to me was I didn't think either of those interceptions at the end of the game had any chance of being caught.
No, they did not. They did not. And Penn State could add two more. Tar Burton went up and almost reeled in one. And to be honest with you, Jair Brown probably would have had a touchdown.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it's funny because I should go back and look at it. But Brown complained this week. James complained this week. I thought that the receiver on that one made a play to kind of knock that away. But, that's neither here nor there at this point.
Right.
At this point,
right.
Penn State, did the one thing that they didn't do last year, which is came away with takeaways. That was a huge component, a missing element last season that they thought they were going to have last season and just never really came to fruition.
Let me put it this way. I think Jordan Stout's punting performance was on par game-wise with John Bruno, with the difference being John Bruno was a national championship, so it has to be elevated. But
yeah,
his
right.
effect on the game, the effect on the game that Stout had was the same as Bruno had that night against Miami.
Well, I mean, even think about.
He had five punts of 50 yards or better in a 76-yarder, which is the third longest in history. He changed field position all night.
Think about two. There were two things that I thought were underrated in terms of their effect on the game, and that was Jaquan Brisker not only intercepting that pass, but returning it to the 40-yard line.
Yes.
Right? And then after a three and out, Jordan Stout pinning them inside their 20. Right?
Right.
Rather than a shank or, whatever. Like, you just never know in those critical situations. And that may have been the difference between Wisconsin having more of an opportunity. I mean, obviously they moved it into Penn State's territory, but more of an opportunity to come away with a win in that situation than what they actually had.
Ellis Brooks will not be able to play the first half of this game tomorrow for Penn State. What did you think, what was your opinion? I mean, targeting is a very iffy thing. I mean, I know what they're trying to do. That's why I'm not big on big games the opening weekend, because I always feel like, what does the NFL do? They call a lot of penalties in the preseason.
Yep.
What does the NBA do? They call a lot of penalty. They call a lot of fouls in the preseason because they're trying to send their messages.
Yep.
And like, I look at the Minnesota Ohio State game. I'm watching this game, and I don't think you need to send that kind of message.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, there has not been a targeting call over the last 3 or 4 years that I have come away thinking Penn State was being intentional about it, right? Like,
oh, right.
As though they had truly just lost their way and were trying to take a kid's head off. Like, I have.
Right, exactly.
Not, right? Like, I have not once thought that. However, the slow-mo film Saturday suggested to me, it looked to me like his helmet hit Mertz's helmet first. That's what it looked like to me. And he just. They've made it plain that that is not possible. You can't do that. If that happens, you're going to get hit. And I thought that James Franklin's point about the ball carrier, changing the rules a little bit, I thought those were all valid. However, he also included, and I think is relevant, look, like, you don't need to do that in that situation. You don't need to throw a shoulder.
All right.
Mertz invited it to a certain extent by
he stayed in bounds. Yeah,
yeah. He brought the same thing up. It's a little bit different with the kick catch interference, but he brought the same thing up with you last night, right? Like, there are protections for these guys, right? Yeah. You're trying to protect the student athlete, but there are protections that at some point it has to be examined what the responsibility is of the players who you're trying to protect. Because at some point it also impacts not the way that a defense is going to approach the game from a aggressiveness standpoint, right? Like, we're just trying to tamp down on people taking their heads off. No, it's going to come to a point where mistakes are going to be made that you're going to have to excuse because the defensive player doesn't know what to do anymore.
Well, the conference isn't going to listen to me because obviously based on one home Saturday basketball game in the Big Ten, they obviously are still not listening to me. But I have advocated for years that now we have the technology to do this, that every second half targeting call needs to be reviewed by the conference office for intent on Sunday to determine whether a player – has to be held out of the first half of the next game. I think you need to give that a level of understanding of what's going. If a guy launches himself, then he is out the first half of the next game. I'm absolutely. But I think all of those should be reviewed, and then the conference office makes a ruling on a Sunday afternoon so the team knows, hey, look, you know what? We looked at it. Yeah, the penalty was 15 yards. He got thrown out, but he can play the entire game on Saturday.
Yeah. No,
that's what I think they should do.
Just the notion of an ejection, right? Like you're already being removed from the rest of the game that you're playing. That's a severe penalty in itself. Like, what's comparable to that in any other sport? I don't really know of one, right? Like, I mean,
fouling out.
Like in terms of it carrying over from
into the next game,
into the next game. I mean that is such a severe penalty that to have that as a blanket resolution for every time that this happens seems unjust to me. I mean I don't think that there's any question about it. It's curious to me that coaches who I presume are fairly adamant about this have not had the influence to create a more reasoned approach.